This is Alan Condon with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast, and I'm thrilled to be joined today by Dr. Joel Nelson, who's the president of UPMC International. Dr. Nelson, a real pleasure to have you on the podcast with us here today. I'd love to turn the floor over to you first and foremost to hear a little bit more about your background and, of course, your new role at UPMC.
Yeah, thanks so much, Alan, and thanks for spending a few minutes with me today. So I'm a trained urologist. That's my clinical practice. I'm an academic urologist. I've been the chair of the Department of Urology at UPMC now in my 25th year. And about 10 years ago, I began to take on an interest in healthcare administration, working both with physicians and hospitals. And that role took over more and more of my time. And more recently, I've moved into a leadership position with UPMC International. The former president, Chuck Pagosta, has announced his retirement, and on February 1st of this year, I became the president of UPMC International. I also have a role at UPMC as chief clinical officer, so I'm involved in healthcare defined in that very broad brushstroke manner. So I'm not just entirely in the international domain. I still have activities here domestically. So I would say that's kind of an overview of how I got to where I am at this moment.
Fantastic. Yeah, thank you so much for the brief intro and setting the stage. So certainly, I know you've been with UPMC for about 10 years or so. You recently kind of taken on that more of a role as president of UPMC International, but as you said, obviously that chief clinical officer role as well. Sounds like you're wearing many different hats on any given day. But if I can ask you, what are the biggest issues that you're really following or paying attention to in healthcare today?
Well, I think both domestically as well as internationally, access to care is, I think, right at the top of almost everybody's list. There's unfortunately an imbalance between demand for care and ability to deliver care. This is frankly more acute internationally because the healthcare is funded for the most part, at least in the countries we're in, through government funding, through a health system, as it were. But even here in the US, getting patients in a timely fashion into the care they need has remained a challenge, really for a variety of reasons. And we're working hard to overcome that. And I think, as I'll point out in just a moment, we provide a unique ability in our international sites to meet some of the demand that exists in those markets in terms of waiting lists and places where the healthcare in those countries just simply can't keep up with the needs of the population. I'd say the second big thing that we're really focusing on is aligning where we deliver services to where those services are needed. And I would say this is more of an effort here domestically, where we have at UPMC, as you know, has 40 plus hospitals in the United States, and making sure that we're providing the type of care, the level of care in the setting that it needs to be. And increasingly, this is moving away from a classic hospital-based bricks and mortar setting to one that's more community-based. And how we make that transition is, you know, right at the front of our attention. And then, you know, as an academic and as an educator in urology, but in medicine in general, you know, being able to retain and attract the top talent is always part of what we're about, whether this is in delivering healthcare in terms of research, education, administration of healthcare. These are all areas where we're, you know, constantly looking for the very best.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, in some of my conversations with health system executives recently, it seems like really what you just kind of paid tribute to there in terms of the workforce challenges and the challenge to attract and retain that top quality talent is such a on the top of every health system executive's priority list at the moment, it seems like. It seems like it would tie right into our next question as well in terms of when you think about the future, what makes you nervous in this healthcare space? And is there anything that you're particularly excited about, Dr. Nelson?
Well, let's take the part of the glass that's full, and that's the excited part. And that is that, you know, I benefit from working in a system that, although it's very large, 26 plus billion in revenues, it's remarkably nimble. And so I'm excited to work for an organization that can move reasonably quickly to figure out where it needs to go to close these gaps in care, to attract the top talent, to respond to the change of healthcare economics, the healthcare delivery systems. So that's very exciting, and that's what brings me to work with a lot of enthusiasm every day, is that I know where we are today is not where we're going to be in a year, and to be part of that change from where we are today to where we need to go is something where I think UPMC sort of uniquely, frankly, is at the front edge of that as a integrated health delivery system with both a payer and a provider. Mm-hmm. In terms of nervousness, I mean, that could be a pretty long list, and there is air in that class, using the former metaphor. You know, we don't know where exactly things are going to settle out. And if we can steal from a moment, and if your readers or your listeners are familiar with Thomas Kuhn, who I was a philosophy major when I was an undergrad, so I had a chance to study this. You know, he had a famous book called Structure of Scientific Revolutions, where he talked about sort of normal science. And if we borrow from him, you begin to get these anomalies. And one of the anomalies that was thrust upon all of us 4 years ago was a virus that was across the world. But that significantly presented anomalies in our care delivery system. We've recovered somewhat, but we're never going to go back to the ways healthcare was delivered in the post-COVID era from what it was pre-COVID. And so I wouldn't say we're formally in a crisis, again, using the Kuhn metaphor of the crisis that causes you to have the so-called paradigm change. But we're pretty aware of the fact that business as usual is not going to meet what we need to be going forward. And very specifically, the revenues that we have to support our businesses are not keeping up with the inflationary pressures and the expenses of recruiting talent, paying for the equipment we need, being in these legacy buildings that are beginning to decay. We call those hospitals that, you know, we have to replace them. So everybody's very challenged to figure out how we continue to create the small margins that are necessary to invest in ourselves to keep the operations going. And, you know, at the edges, when you have small systems, smaller facilities, you know, they don't have the same breadth or resources. And so they begin to really suffer. And, you know, you know this because you do the finance side. You know, there's lots of healthcare systems that are truly in crisis, and there's not a clear paradigm shift on the horizon. And again, this is one of the things that's great about working at UPMC is that, you know, there's a culture here of always looking for a better way to do things. So I would say that's what I'm nervous about, is this uncertainty of where we're going, but the certainty that we need to change. And I think we all embrace that.
Absolutely. And you're right in terms of the long list of things that potentially could make healthcare leaders nervous. But also, like you mentioned, there are some really exciting opportunities for areas of growth and potential advancements in tech as well, which really has a great opportunity to reshape healthcare delivery in the near future. With that in mind, like you said, Dr. Nelson, it seems like the anomaly of the COVID-19 pandemic, anomaly in terms of workforce challenges, the inflationary environment, healthcare leaders really have to be nimble, adaptable, able to change and at any given moment, it seems. When you think about the next 2 or 3 years, what do you think will be most effective? What do you think the most effective healthcare leaders need to be successful?
You know, stealing the hockey metaphor, know where the puck is going is clear. So being agile, frankly, sometimes not following what, you know, the wisdom of the crowd is telling you, but thinking, I think I actually know better where we may want to go with this. So anticipation, being agile, where you think certain going to be things are going to go. I think not being wedded to a system that appears to be working reasonably well, knowing that that system may not work so well in the near future. And specifically, one of the transitions that we're in the midst of here is how do we move the delivery, for example, of outpatient surgery to settings that are more cost-effective, more efficient, but perhaps have a decline in overall revenue. So at the same time that you're trying to maintain a revenue stream, you're also recognizing that you can't afford to do it in the most expensive place where you deliver care. So being agile is certainly important. I guess associated to that would be the idea that never be too attached to your own individual paradigm, and be willing at any moment when it's not working to recognize there is an anomaly, we're going into crisis, and we have to disrupt it. We have to accept a new paradigm. So trying to make sure that you can articulate why to those around you who think everything is just fine, that looking ahead in the next 12 to 24 months, things may not be so fine, and we should think about where the puck is going, because that's where we need to skate. And then I think understanding how to use the limited resources, the limited margins that we generate to make strategic investments. You know, we there's lots of things we would love to do, and then there are things we have to do. And I think in the current environment, the list of what we have to do, what's necessary, needs to unfortunately be our focus right now. And that the things that are nice to have, we can continue to keep that list. But, you know, as we go through this transformation, keeping healthcare delivery and high quality care at the front is going to be really important. So I would say those are agility, disruption, and then how do we invest the resources that we have to move forward.
Absolutely. I think some fantastic nuggets of information there for any healthcare leaders listening to our podcast here today. Dr. Nelson, I want to shift gears a little bit, because I'm fascinated by some of the excellent work that UPMC is doing, not just in the US and its hospitals and its urgent care outpatient settings, but also overseas. We know one of the most recent milestones we covered was in relation to UPMC ISMET, which I believe is in Palermo, Italy. I believe it's obviously a leader in the fields of transplantation, cardiothoracic and abdominal surgery, and some highly specialized therapies as well. Big milestone in that it recently completed its 3,000th organ transplant. I'd love to hear a little bit more about this partnership specifically in Italy, and kind of what you see as the next steps in growth and in that market.
So this is a unique model that was conceived in the late 1990s, 1997, so, you know, over a quarter century ago. There was a recognition that a lot of the citizens in Sicily who needed what we call quaternary, or the highest level of care, were having to actually leave Sicily and go to the north of Italy mostly to get that care. And specifically related to solid organ transplantation, there had been a recognition that there were a number of surgeons that were trained in this case, liver transplantation here in Pittsburgh with the late Tom Starzl, who believed that and were successful at setting up a solid organ transplantation program in Palermo. And so in what had previously been, as I learned today, an illegal parking lot attached to a large public hospital, a 100-bed specialty hospital was built by the region of Sicily. So this was a publicly funded building. And then UPMC came alongside and has now, for the last more than 25 years, have been in a management contract in this public-private partnership where we employ the physicians and many of the administrative staff, and we do we run a transplant hospital, which you just pointed out has this milestone of 3,000 solid organ transplants. It is complementary to the existing healthcare in that community, because nobody else is doing solid organ transplant. As you can imagine, that's a quite specialized program to stand up. And then attached to that are similarly high-end surgical procedures, namely cardiac surgery, thoracic surgery, complex abdominal surgery. We also do pediatric solid organ transplants. So it is a fairly well-defined book of business, and it's been, frankly, wildly successful and supported by the Italian public system, because we are able to do this care quite efficiently at very high levels of quality, and provides a service to that part of the world, which draws people from the entire Mediterranean basin to receive these transplants. So it is in the crown of UPMC International, clearly the largest jewel and the one that we're the most proud of.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Like you said, from the late 1990s, this partnership has been around. Really, really fascinating to hear everything that it's accomplished so far. And I know UPMC International also has similar successful partnerships in the likes of Croatia, in Ireland, in Kazakhstan. I'm curious as to what are the unique challenges that US health systems kind of face when they're moving into these overseas markets and trying to establish a presence? How do you kind of, what are the biggest barriers, I guess, in terms of getting these partnerships up and running off the ground?
Well, the easy part is the types of clinical issues that we have to address, right? So disease and the solution to disease are the same, right? Clinical care is clinical care. The challenging part is that you're doing it in places that have a different culture, a different language, a different economic structure. And I would say that last is probably the one that I became most acutely aware of, because all of the places we are have a public healthcare system that all members of that country have access to care through that system. And so you want to create care or delivery of care in a way that is hand in glove, not competing with, not redundant with the public system. And as I said at the very beginning, because the funding that's available to these populations doesn't allow the same access to care that we enjoy in the United States, unfortunately, certain conditions end up being put in a long queue. So there's these very long waiting lists where we, as a private provider of healthcare, can strategically align ourselves with the care that's necessary. In most of the markets, our early entree into this sort of healthcare was around the delivery of external beam radiation. So to set up the device that's necessary is a large capital investment, a LINAC, and then the expertise that's necessary, the vault, which, as you know, is thick concrete, all requires a certain expertise and capital investment. We, as UPMC, have been able to make those investments, and because radiation therapy is highly effective as a cancer treatment, and in the past and in the foreseeable future will never be replaced with another cancer therapy, we understand the economics of what's the likelihood that this population will need this therapy based on the age of the population, the incidence of cancer, the types of cancer where radiation is the appropriate treatment. And so as a business model, this has made it less risky because we know we're delivering something the population needs. We're able to do this in conjunction with the public system, because the capacity in the public system often isn't adequate to meet the needs. And as you know, cancer doesn't take a break, it keeps growing. So delay in cancer therapy can really lead to very unfortunate outcomes. So we have been able to work in a variety of settings, both in Italy, in Ireland, and as you mentioned, we're in the process of building such a unit in Croatia. But this model has introduced us to the culture, introduced us to the people that we're working with. And because we're viewed clearly as added benefit, not as redundant, not as carpetbaggers coming in trying to make a buck, but actually meeting the needs of a community, this allows us then to expand those services to other things. And as you mentioned at the beginning, we've been able to expand recently to acquire the largest orthopedic hospital in Ireland, the special surgery clinic. That's just in the north of Dublin, which is a freestanding orthopedic hospital, 40 orthopedic surgeons, 7 operating rooms running 6 days a week for patients who are waiting to, in many cases, have joint replacements, who have decided that they're going to take their private healthcare insurance, which you know about half the citizens of Ireland have this, and use our facility and our ability to get in quickly as opposed to doing that in the public system. So we look for opportunities where we can augment what's being delivered to the population, again, in a way that's adding value, not being redundant or subtracting value from that public system.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. It's literally just 5 minutes down the road that the sports surgery clinic from my house where I grew up. So I'll be paying. Hopefully, won't be paying a visit to any orthopedic injuries down the line, but I'll definitely be back and hopefully swing by it and see how it's going. But I think you've mentioned, obviously, in terms of the success, in terms of cancer care partnerships in Italy and Ireland. Orthopedics is obviously such a big growth opportunity, a big growth area. Some of these partnerships that you've mentioned, specifically in Ireland, I believe that was the fourth hospital that UPMC acquired in Ireland. Can you share a little bit more insight or dive one level deeper into why orthopedics and sports medicine is such a big growth opportunity there?
Well, as you probably know, we all get older, and the our joints wear out, and the ability to manage this in the past, when people had a problem with their joints, they sort of put up with it and walked with a cane or didn't walk at all. But now there are surgical alternatives to allow people to have quality of life where joints are replaced, and I'll just use that as a specific example. So in the past, this was sort of what it meant to get old, and you sort of teetered around and didn't do a lot of walking. Well, people don't need to live that way anymore. So because there's an unmet need in Ireland, as there is in most of the world for the aging population, the need for high quality, efficient joint replacement surgery, which is done by orthopedic surgeons, is a real growth opportunity for us. And because it's in this particular example, uniquely orthopedic. So this is not a general hospital where you would go if you actually were sick. I mean, we're talking about really a mechanical problem with your joints. So it allows you to be pretty efficient because the kind of care you're delivering is elective, is not disrupted by trauma or other things that would, make it less efficient. And so it's unlike the public system, which has to take all kinds of other conditions and figure out at the same time how are they going to do joint replacement surgery, we uniquely can just do joint replacement surgery along with other orthopedic sports medicine types of procedures in that facility. Does that answer your question, Alan?
Absolutely, yeah. I think no doubt worldwide, and of course here in the United States, I think as we think about that aging population, I think orthopedics across the board is going to be a significant area of growth. Particularly look at health systems like moving into Florida and whatnot over in recent years. Certainly interesting to pay attention in terms of trends in the healthcare space down the line. Dr. Nelson, last question for you before I let you go, and a really fascinating conversation so far. UPMC, of course, has one of the largest international footprints of any US-based health system. We've talked a little bit about Italy, Ireland, also Croatia, Kazakhstan, which we don't have time to unfortunately to get into on this podcast. But are there any other countries overseas or in the North American space that UPMC is eyeing in terms of establishing any further partnerships in the near future?
Well, we've committed to, in the words of our board, do more in fewer places. So in the past, UPMC International was spread pretty broadly in a large number, more than 10 different countries. We've really focused in our international in the international countries we're in now, Italy, Ireland, as we mentioned, Croatia. And we regularly are looking for ways that we can continue to partner. So, for example, last Thursday I was in Belfast meeting with the minister, the deputy minister of health, to look at ways that we could help the citizens of Northern Ireland with the exact same problems that I was talking about earlier, this imbalance between demand and supply of healthcare, and what were ways that UPMC could help fill that gap. We have some interesting opportunities in Limerick, working with the Bon Secours Health System to stand up another radiation unit. We have a large number of sports medicine facilities across Ireland, and we're regularly looking at opportunities. We have, in this day and age, with resources being more constrained, we're being more strategic. We're being more careful about how, when we decide to expand, what's the business case for that expansion. But as you point out, we're starting from a position of strength. We've got, a lot of experience now in the international markets. And so I think the future for our enterprise looks quite bright.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Nelson, again, congratulations on your new role. It sounds like certainly a really fascinating and interesting one, and a lot of great things come down the pipeline at UPMC International with you involved. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you today, and I look forward to catching up with you again down the line.
Okay, thanks so much, Alan. It's been a pleasure.